This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello once again, Lucha Lushes, and welcome back to another episode of Lucha Undead. Get to know the PTBN PWO, but this is a very special, I guess, CubsFan.com edition of... as we have our special guest for the evening of Trevor, is it Trevor Dame, correct?
Dame, yes.
Dame, also known as Hobbs, I guess, on the F4W board primarily? Where else would people know you by that name?
I don't post very often anywhere else, but I do post on the Pro Wrestling Only board and Voices of Wrestling very occasionally, but F4W board's my main haunt.
Ah, okay. See there, and now you've already blown my first question, so that's perfect. So I became, I guess, well, I was already familiar with Hobbs from the board, obviously, just like hearing your name thrown around here and there, as somewhat of a lurker for years and years. But I guess I became familiar or excited with the idea of having you on as a guest from the, how exactly should it be pronounced because of the weird spelling? Is it through?
Just through the years.
Okay.
It's so spelled differently, but the pronunciation is the same.
Ah, I like it. Okay. That's, I enjoy that, especially when people then try to force like weird pronunciations. That's not how you say that word. Pronouncements? That's a different thing. when they try to force like an odd spelling to be different than what it is, when it's just, it's through the years. Great yep. show where you guys are reviewing, I guess, ROH from the beginning, which is kind of fantastic. Everyone's doing this early 2000s retro vibe. It feels right now is kind of the hot thing to cover wrestling from 17 years ago. But as I said, you already blew the first question. So the first question is, are you now, or have you ever been a member of the PWO board?
Yes, I have.
Yeah,
and you lurk far more than I post. I don't post that much, but because it's kind of an intimidating board, because everyone there is so good at having like a specialization. Like everyone is into something, and they're into something so deep. And I would say the thing I was deepest into was probably the era of Ring of Honor that me and Matt are covering now on the podcast. So it's always a board where I really enjoy reading it, particularly when they were doing the Greatest Wrestler Ever project. But I always feel like I don't have a ton to add about the actual conversations they're having.
Get that from a lot of people. I totally understand. I think I'm just like foolhardy enough to run into it headlong and not worry about coming across like an ass sometimes. So I've never like had that weird, like, not weird. I've never had the little bit of intimidation factor, I think, that a lot of other people get. But it totally makes sense because people can come across pretty well informed. There's a lot of really smart people on the board there. You're also Hobbs on the PWO board, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and you did kind of, I wouldn't say fame is a weird word to use, but I think you were a pretty prominent board user over at F4W Online. Was the F4W board, F4W site in general, your first exposure to, I guess, internet wrestling culture?
No, that was way, way longer, way earlier. It was actually, my first exposure to the internet was actually, I mean, wrestling culture online, was Scott Keith's original NetCop news board when I was probably 13 or 14, and my family first got cable internet. The first two things, you know, a 13-year-old's going to look up are women, if he's a boy, or certain kinds of girls, or and wrestling. And wrestling was much easier to look at when my parents were around. And we got, that's where, like, the NetCop news board introduced me to a whole variety of people. It introduced me to the idea of Dave Meltzer, you know, newsletters, just, you know, even explaining how wrestling was, you know, just as a kid who had done nothing but read the aftermags and watch it on TV. And from there, what had happened actually was the NetCop news board went from, I don't know what style of message board it was, but there is this system of message boards called Delphi message boards. And, you know, Scott Keith had one. There was another site called NWWWO.com, the New World Wide Web Order, that had one. And basically a bunch of people from the Scott Keith boards kind of migrated to there, and we posted for there for years and years until those boards kind of petered out. But yeah, a ton of people that would be known to probably some of your listeners come from those boards. CRZ posted there. Justin Shapiro, who's on the Alan 4L show now and has his own podcast at thecubsfan.com, had one. My co-host Matt had one. Just a whole ton of Joe Gagne, you know, posted there. So just a lot of people that you might recognize.
And so that was, I guess you said, not really where you started, but I guess where a lot of people posted on that board after the Scott Keith board was
Yeah,
gone.
And we also kind of outgrew Scott Keith a bit, I would say, where I don't think Scott was maybe interested in running that much of a – that big of a group. And also, I think our taste just started to expand more, where for a lot of us, at least I know for me, Scott Keith, at first, you were just like, I was never reading the news groups. So to me, just, you know, there's one guy who reviews everything, like, that was your kind of whole world. And you then things started to kind of broaden from there.
Yeah, I guess that kind of plays into what I was thinking, was that you kind of more started to flourish. And as you talk about the people, Justin Shapiro, who stands out to me as like a guy who like I really enjoy on podcasts. I think he's fantastic. And Joe Gagne, who was like, you know, one of the first wrestling podcasts that was, I guess, being run by a fan. That's such a weird thing to say, right? Because it's like, now Wade Keller's on this kick about making sure to say that his podcast with Bruce Mitchell is the first wrestling pod or the first podcast that's ever existed, right? He loves to say, but like Joe Gagne is really, you know, a lot of people say like one of his show was out, like one of the first podcasts out, and guys were like starting to make their voice and their name heard. And it seems, I mean, to me at least, it seems like it took you until just recently to have like a podcast of your own. Was there hesitation from you seeing all the people around you doing it, or was it just you just weren't interested, or were you focused on writing stuff and less about like kind of the podcast side of things?
I'm a person who I knew I couldn't do a podcast alone. I think there's very few people who can just talk to themselves for an hour and make that engaging. So, and I'm also a person that I'm really awkward about. I don't like imposing on anybody. I come from a family where they would have 10-minute arguments with company over who would pay the dinner bill, and they'd be fighting over who got to pay it, not who didn't have to pay it. So I was always squeamish about ever asking someone to do a podcast. I didn't know what I would even do it about. And Matt was one of those guys on the message board where we probably hadn't talked in years, my co-host Matt Feuerstein and me. And we used to be in AOL Instant Messenger chats in our teens and early 20s with Justin and another guy named Albert Ching, who's now a writer at comicbookresources.com, where he's doing lots of really cool stuff over there. And the four of us would have a lot of private chats, and we'd have chats with a lot of other people. And then we slowly, at least I did, I just stopped kind of talking to them as much, because I just have a hard time sometimes, again, opposing myself. I'm usually a person where I can talk for a long time, but only if someone talks to me first, because I'm just worried about that stuff. But anyway, me and Matt, in years and years ago, used to talk quite a bit about Ring of Honor. And then Matt invited me on his other podcast, which was List 'Em and Learn, where it's another good, very good podcast on thecubsfan.com. He invited me, and it was like the first time I had talked to Matt in years, where he was going, hey, you know, do you want to do an episode? And I think he was kind of running through a bunch of the people that had been on those old Delphi forums, and I was kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel with me. And the episode went well, so we did one about the top 10 Ring of Honor wrestlers for our second shot together. And then it was just as simple as Matt saying, hey, would you like to try doing a podcast where we review every, you know, kind of do a Where the Big Boys in Play inspired podcast with Ring of Honor, since that was something we both knew we really liked during the mid-2000s. And it was just as easy as someone asking me, and someone I knew with Matt that I'd already done a couple podcasts with and knew it would work okay.
So It's a really interesting thing now that, I don't know, you talk about your family fighting over paying the bill and not wanting to impose kind of, I don't know, your voice on people. That's a kind of an odd way to look at it, I think. Is that, you kind of say you think it comes from your background, but do you think it's kind of picked up anywhere else that makes you think like people don't want to hear what you have to say? Because honestly, I'm a fan of the podcast. I think people are listening to it, and you know, we maybe peel back the curtain before we were talking. You were like making sure I knew who it was, that I wasn't, I didn't sign up and thinking I was getting the better of the two hosts. And I was like, no, actually I wanted you. You're the one who kind of stands out more to me as the interesting interview, the interesting person to talk to. So, what do you think it is that makes you, I guess, not guarded, but so worried that you're like wasting people's time?
Well, I think it's more just, I really, I mean, it's such a cliche thing, but it really is the family thing, because it's not even as much a kindness thing as my family's probably pretty neurotic about, we don't like the idea of it's a very Canadian thing probably, where we don't like the idea of someone else being polite to us and suffering in kind. And my parents kind of unfortunately tainted my mind with that. Like, the worst thing to me would be the idea of someone spending time with me and then going home, and that idea of them going, man, he's such a drain to talk to. And it's not even as much as a low self-esteem thing. It's just, it's easier sometimes to be asked to do things than to initiate things. I mean, but my family is just very neurotic in that. My mom is, for example, is a person who will, if the TV cable repairman would come over when I was a kid, my mom would spend about 3 or 4 hours cleaning the house before he came over for a 15-minute call. And that's just kind of the way my family has always been, as far back as I can remember.
Yeah, it seems like a almost, not self-sacrificing, but that might sound a little strong, but it almost is like a self-sacrificing bit of, like, just manners or just being polite. And I definitely can relate to that. I have a bit of that myself. But at the same time, you know, I started podcasts. I think I did actually. I went out of my way to ask to be on another podcast, and then it just kind of came together where I'm on it more regularly now, and kind of started my own things from the beginnings and stuff like that. But as you talk about it, kind of naturally came together from you guest spotting on Listen and Learn, which is a show that I enjoy as well. The Cubs fan has it's interesting that the CubsFan.com, for like a kind of like a Lucha news site, I think is what most people think of it as, actually has a pretty great little podcast network. Albeit that the stuff, a lot of the shows are a little bit sporadic in their release dates, probably doesn't hurt kind of the popularity, or probably does hurt the popularity of the network. It's like a lot of really strong shows though for a Lucha website. But I guess instead of meandering, I should like get into asking questions. Sorry about that.
Don't worry about it.
I guess what I wanted to say was, like, you wouldn't do it on your own, right? Because you said, like, you'd have to have someone ask you, you want to be polite, this and that. But, like, let's say what's the dream podcast scenario that someone could come and ask you to do, that you would just be so happy that someone finally asked you to do that, rather than the ROH thing that you're doing? Or is it the ROH thing that you're doing?
Honestly, it is the ROH thing, and I never even knew, because it's the only thing I feel like I have a real comfort level with. And Matt is great about being the most low – I think we both line up at being the most kind of low-pressure podcast, where we've been doing it about every 3 weeks. We do it when we feel like doing it. We both agree it's just for fun. It's, you know, we have no desire of taking over the world or, you know, making money or starting a Patreon. Not that there's anything wrong with podcasts that do, because I enjoy some podcasts that do that. But for us, it's literally just a time to get together once every 2 or 3 weeks and talk and revisit these old shows that we really enjoyed. And I think particularly, I mean, I can't completely speak for Matt, but I know I'm still pretty into modern wrestling, but I think Matt, while he still watches some, you know, I think there's things he really misses it kind of about the Ring of Honor of 2004, 2005 that we'll hopefully be getting to. So I think that's a real extra fun little piece for him, is that ability to kind of revisit it, but with some purpose. And I just really like being a part of that. I like the few times I can make Matt chuckle. I like when I can surprise him with something I found from a newsletter that he didn't know. So actually, Matt, it's not just the topic, but I think doing it with Matt actually is a big part of why I enjoy it. I think I just really enjoy doing podcasts with Matt.
Well, yeah, that makes sense. And I mean, I think it comes through, as you said, the show's low pressure for you, and comes through in the quality of the shows. You guys have really good kind of repartee between each other, I guess, if I'll say that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it is interesting because, again, me and Matt hadn't talked for years before this, I don't think. Maybe once or twice, I don't know. Where on these Delphi boards, we used to have just an open-running AOL Instant Messenger chat room basically every day, and people would go in and out of it all during the day. And there would always be between probably in its heyday 10 and 25 people there. And eventually, over the years, it kind of petered down. And I remember there would be times where the conversation in the main chat was kind of petering out. But we would start a secret second chat room with just four of us, me, Matt, Justin Shapiro, and Albert Chang, where we would basically have a separate chat behind the back of the first chat. Anyone who's listening to this that didn't realize that, I'm sorry. And so me and Matt went from like talking every day, and for some reason I never texted like the other guys. Again, I don't really initiate conversations. I just fell out of the habit of talking to them. And so Matt kind of asking me to do his own podcast not only sparked the podcast, but it basically re-sparked us talking to each other, where now we talk to each other probably most days or every other day. So that's a nice little side effect of all of this.
It seems interesting to me because you seem like you're fulfilled in the friendship and the relationship with Matt, and you enjoy it. And I would assume even with, you know, everybody else on the board and all that, but you kind of let it go to the wayside. Do you have, like, relationships, friendships, and stuff outside of the internet that you kind of are able to keep more regular, I guess?
Yeah, I have had I'm a big kind of monogamous relationship guy, so I've had friends outside, but I'm a person where I kind of am good with one or two people I can find in life. And then it's not that I'm not searching for more people, but I'm pretty, I don't need a lot to be satisfied about that kind of stuff. But I'm also the kind of guy that when I do meet somebody, I can probably talk to them for 6-7 hours at a time and not run out of steam. I'm like a conversation camel.
Fantastic. I like it. When you kind of, as you say, you didn't talk to Matt for years, and I'd like to like extend it, because I mean, was it just him, or was it pretty much everyone that was on the board, on the chat, that you weren't really having conversations with?
It was most people. The people that would talk to me a bit more often, that would send me messages, I would always reply to. But it was really interesting because, you know, the Delphi boards, you know, their heyday was basically during the Attitude Era and the wrestling boom of the late 90s into, as it kind of petered down in the early to mid 2000s. And you could see, I mean, why I migrated to the F4W board was sometimes I still wanted to read and talk about wrestling. And it just, every year there was less people on the Delphi boards, fewer people in the chats. And we even had a separate board called, it's just a really, I don't even know if this would be interesting to anybody, but when we were always posting on the Delphi boards, there became like this splinter group of people who always posted in the one unrelated thread that was just the catch-all thread for all non-wrestling topics. And they were kind of cheeky. We were cheeky sons of bitches. So we formed our own private message board called the New Thread Order, which people, for some reason, wanted to get into but couldn't. And it was a really weird thing, but a fun thing. And over the years, all those people, I think a lot of them, you know, we're still, some of us are still Facebook friends and stuff, but a lot of us grew apart to the point where I don't think that board's been active for years. The archives are still there. But we, again, we, this is a group of people, we would talk to each other on AOL Instant Messenger, probably a lot of us, for 4 or 5 hours every night, like after work, after school. And I think it's just like, in a way, that was kind of my, a comparable experience, I think, to people have to high school, which is you have this group of friends and you just, you're related around a common interest. And as some people's interest in that common interest drops off, so does your friendship, kind of.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes sense. Did your interest in wrestling drop off, though? Or
My interest kind of ebbed and flowed, but I think what helped was I kind of was able to diversify my interests. I was, you know, when my interest in WWE would start to wane, I would just, you know, I found Ring of Honor. And if my interest in that waned for a while, I could pick up, you know, Japanese wrestling or go back to the WWE if I felt they were doing something interesting. My only time in my life I was ever completely cut off from wrestling was, I think, like a lot of people, you have that little period around adolescence where you leave, and then if you come back, you're kind of stuck for forever. And I remember for me, it was, I had gotten into wrestling probably in the early to mid 90s, around 93, 94, and stuck around for a few years and was super into it. And then I had left for a couple years, and then I was just in a magazine, in a place selling a lot of magazines, a newsstand, and there was an issue of PWI with Hulk Hogan and Razor Ramon and Diesel on the cover, except of course it was Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash and Scott Hall. And the idea that they were a bad guy group and using their real names, and you know, it just blew my mind. I bought that magazine, and at that point, I just started watching wrestling again every week, and I've never really left ever since then.
So you said, like, the early 2000s era ROH was big for you even at the time it was going on. Kind of, what got you, I guess, exposed to it originally, and what do you think made it stick for you so much?
I think the... I was probably just something we picked off of message boards. I would read, for example, the Death Valley Driver message board, so I know they would be interested in that kind of stuff. And I just decided to give it a try after hearing so much about it. But what I think I really liked about it was almost like a do-it-yourself Columbia Record Club for wrestling or something, where Ring of Honor had, at some point in the mid-2000s, hit this sweet spot where there would be two or three events a month, and so it was like, if you had $30 to $40 a month, you would kind of get this drip of wrestling. And for my life at the time, it was kind of the perfect amount to get these two or three three-hour events a month. And just the fact that at the time, Ring of Honor had, I think, they had enough story where you kind of always had a hook for the next episode, the next DVD, but you never felt drained by it. It was good for a kind of a person that wanted to keep their footed wrestling, but not maybe devote themselves too much into it.
Yeah, no, I mean, that does make sense. And it was kind of, it's just one show, so it's all self-contained in that one DVD. And so you don't have to follow too much ancillary product. And I guess at that time as well, I don't know, were you keeping up at all with kind of, I mean, around that time, it was mostly just WWE. Were you even watching at that time?
I would, but I was not an every week person. I was slowly at that time fading away from being a weekly viewer. And over the years, there's been times I've come back as a weekly viewer, and sometimes that I've been more sporadic. But I've always been the kind of person where I will listen to all the news about WWE every week. So even if I wasn't watching, I would be up to date in a way. I would always, you know, longtime subscriber to, obviously, to the Observer Figure Four site. So listening to all the Observer radios, I would always be up to date even if I wasn't watching. And I would always be the kind of person where if there was something I felt sounded good, I would go back and catch that segment. But Ring of Honor was the thing that I could really I would be a completist on, because I am, when I get into things, a completist. So the idea of I'm going to watch every DVD in order, you know, I'm going to watch every segment. There's no wrestler I'm going to X out, even if I don't like them. I'm going to just absorb this soup to nuts every time.
Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back on and maybe try to get away from the wrestling for a bit and talk about your real life. Talk about the shoot life. How's that sound?
Sounds good.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
So, we're back. And, surprise, surprise, out of nowhere, I've been messing with the format. I've got a co-host now, Mr. Adrian De La Torre. Adrian, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Tim, I'm doing good. I'm doing good. How's everybody else doing tonight? That's what really matters.
I'm still kind of sick, honestly. You know what I got the other day?
It's really weird, because Matt was sick last weekend, so... And I'm starting to get congested this week, so...
Speaking of sickness, let me ask you really quick, since you work in a hospital.
Yes, I am down with the sickness, if that's what you're
going to
ask.
No. If someone is allergic to animals and they're always taking allergy pills, like literally every day, is that safe for their? Is that good for their health? Is that okay?
Yeah, people are supposed to just take allergy pills every day.
Oh, okay. Because I mean, like, if I take Advil every day, I don't think that's going to be good for me in the long run, right? So I was
depends on how much people do take Advil every day.
Yeah, but I mean,
my dad.
Oh, I was just gonna say really quick, when I had surgery like 6 years ago, I had inguinal hernia, and like I was obviously prescribed medication. On the bottles it says like, you know, you can't take, if you take, or I read about like if you take it all the time, then it's not good. Like you get constipated, you get this and that and the other. So, like, I'm thinking if you take allergy pills every day, doesn't it in the long term fuck you up in one way or the other? I mean,
no.
Okay. Well, that's why I was wondering. That's why
allergy pills are meant to be, most of them are meant to be taken daily, depending on what you're taking.
Okay. Well, this person didn't specify, but she just said, yeah, I work in a PetSmart and I trim, I do the animal grooming. And I'm allergic to animals slightly, so I take allergy pills every day. And I'm like, well, why the hell would you? Whatever. It doesn't matter.
Most of them, in fact, you're expected to take daily.
Okay. If you're allergic. Right.
But we're talking seasonal here. Like, I guess with a pet, though, we'd be talking about literally every day for a period of years. I mean, not like, oh, I take this every day during the spring. I mean, would that be different?
Well, no. This person was telling me that she's allergic to pretty much everything, and she takes allergy pills every day because she has a pet and she works in a pet store. So, I don't know.
She sounds like a nightmare.
She does.
I'm allergic. You know those people. I'm allergic to everything. No, you're not.
Well, she said
I'm allergic to six things. You know which six things they are.
She said she went and got that test done where they prick your back, and that everything that they tested her for.
Oh, everything just came up like fire. She's actually allergic to the silicone that they use on the needles.
Possibly, yeah. Possibly.
Yeah, that's the old wives' tale.
Allergic to oxygen.
Wanted to get one of those scratch tests real bad because I've known people that get. I think that's what they call them, those scratch tests, where they see what kind of allergies you have. Because I've known people where it's like the scratch test will tell them, you know, hey, you're allergic to dogs or whatever, which is what they already knew. But then it'll be like, hey, you have a mild allergy with these seven things you handle every day and aren't even aware you have an allergy. And it always makes me wonder, do those people, like, is that scratch test BS in that sense? Or would, like, people feel better if they cut all this stuff out of their lives and they just don't know it?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting kind of way to look at it. There is also the idea that because they don't really know the science 100% behind it, but there is working theories that allergies are caused by overexposure.
Yeah.
So if it's things that you work with every day, that could have been what caused the allergy to begin with. But yeah, I mean, you know, they could cut it out of their life and they'd feel better. All in all, but I think we've just added a new question. We've got the first question and the final question, but maybe we now have to have middle of the show question. Hey, Trevor, what are you allergic to?
I am allergic to cats.
Mm.
And
it's not
me too, Trevor. Me too. I have a mild allergy to them. Just so you know. Go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
I wouldn't say it's no problem. I wouldn't say mine's like the I can't breathe and this is a medical emergency, but it's a. We let our 5-year-old son play with our company's cat for the entire evening, and then his face is all puffy and his eyes are red and itchy, and we freak out and go, what's wrong with him? I remember, it was funny, years later after my parents discovered I had an allergy to cats, we were visiting somebody that had a cat, and my mom's great idea to like a 10-year-old boy was to go, hey, Trevor, let's see if you're still allergic to a cat. Lift the cat into my face and press it into my face. And then sure enough, 10 minutes later, we discovered the hard way. I was, in fact, still allergic to cats.
Wow. Huh.
And so was that a common theme in your childhood? Is your mother's reckless abandon for your well-being?
No, my mom was actually very, very protective and a very good mom. But again, it wasn't a serious allergy, but... My mom, if anything, was probably more overprotective. She probably, other than that, would be the kind of person to put me in a plastic bubble so I didn't hurt myself.
Yeah, wow. I'm kidding around anyway. So just cats right now is all you know that you're allergic to, but possibly got to do the scratch test and dig deeper, huh?
I have like a 2-week-a-year allergy to grass when it first turns to spring, but nothing else other than that.
And do you take seasonal allergy meds during the spring then?
I used to when I was younger, but nowadays I just kind of tough it out and close the windows. Because it's literally like 1 or 2 weeks when the pollen's in the air.
Got it. Mm. No, so, okay, like daily allergy pills are fine to take every day for your life. Because some people are allergic to things that aren't seasonal and they happen all the time. That's not going to mess with you. The pain meds that they gave you for your inguinal hernia are probably a lot stronger than just Advil, Adrian.
Right.
So, so there is definitely an issue with taking those regularly. They can form a dependency, and they can also be damaging to your liver and other organs.
Right, right.
Healthcare Minute here on the Lucha Undead. So I'm going to assume, Trevor, you're not a healthcare professional yourself, are you?
No. I've been dealing with a lot lately because my dad is, not to bring the show down, is ill, but I've learned too much about certain things because, like a lot of people, I become a Wikipedia level expert on anything involved, anything that comes into my life. But I guess the one thing that was kind of remind me of, which is funny, is, well, not super funny, but doctors give you completely different answers when you're older than when you're younger. Like, my dad's questions nowadays for anything, like, is it safe to take this many Tylenol or something, is always now just, the answer from the doctors is always, you're 72, who cares? Like,
yeah, right.
Answers I would get would be completely different, but it's like, eh, if you want to take an extra 3 over the limit, who cares? You know, you're 72. If you want to eat that donut and Dunkin' cream cheese, who cares? You're 72. Like, it's the same answer for everything.
Mm. Yeah, right. It's just, I mean, I guess I got, I don't know why, but I think just because I heard a few different people talk about it, and like, I don't lead a crazy lifestyle, but I do drink beer. I like beer, and like, that's what we do.
You like beer?
Talk about it and stuff. but like, I've recently got really scared about the idea of getting gout.
Ooh. What is gout exactly, like, though?
That's the weird thing, is I don't really know, other than it's really painful in your foot, and it comes from like eating a lot of rich stuff. And the main reason why I'm scared of it is because of that. Like, if I get it, then I'll have to stop drinking beer. And that's like the one thing that I like really enjoy. And I don't even drink that often. Like, I haven't had a beer in like over a week, and I don't eat like red meats or rich foods regularly or anything like that. So it's just, it's funny that like you get these things in your head and you're just kind of obsessed with them out of nowhere. Trevor, you ever had any weird obsessions or fears?
Actually, I did have, I actually literally had weird obsessions, because when I was growing up, I had obsessive compulsive disorder.
Fantastic.
And I had the tapping one, the counting one, where I would do stuff like have to flip the light switch in my bedroom 19 times exactly before I could enter the room. And luckily that was... in my case, I was lucky. I was easily able to treat it with like a low dose of an antidepressant, but I know some people aren't as lucky. But yeah, there was a period when I was younger where I was constantly holding things up, because I was like, no, just let me tap this 4 more times. We can't go into this restaurant yet. You know, 6 more taps, please. Let me just count to 72. Wait, no, 72 is bad. 83 is good. Yeah, 83 is good. And...
The 19 would have drove me crazy, because it's an odd number.
Yeah. For me, the numbers always changed, like what was good and what was bad.
Have you guys, Trevor, do you ever watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? There's an episode where Charlie and his mom, they have to flick the light switch 3 times, and they go, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And then they have to close the door, you know, 3 times, 1, 2, 3, 1. Is it kind of like that? Is that what you're saying, sort of?
Yeah. It's very much like that. I haven't seen that episode. I've seen a bunch of them, but yeah, it's weird, because OCD is at least for me, you are aware how stupid it is. You don't believe, like, it's almost like, in my experience, you have this feeling something horrible will happen to you if you don't do this thing, but you consciously, in your conscious mind, know it's complete bullshit. And yet you feel compelled to do it, just because you know if you don't, I could ignore it. It would just eat at me the rest of the night. I would almost put it like, I was very briefly, when I was younger, a smoker. And I didn't have to have a cigarette, but if I didn't have a cigarette when I was craving it, I knew it would ruin my night, because I wouldn't be able to focus on the movie I was watching or the conversation I was having or, you know, the dinner I was eating, because I would just constantly, part of my brain would be craving that cigarette. And that's what OCD was kind of like for me, where it was something I could ignore, but then it would just ruin my night. It was easier to do the count to 19.
Yeah. How do you know if you have it?
Wearing your seatbelt or getting vaccinations.
Yeah.
How do you know if you have it?
You know you're supposed to, but it's all bullshit.
like, how do you know if you have OCD? Like, are you self-diagnosed or did you go to a doctor? Like, how do you know you have that or had that?
Well, see, it came on kind of in my, probably around 11 or 12, it started to come on. And it didn't just come on all at once. It started to progress. And when something comes on so slow, you don't really notice it. It's almost like if your eyes start getting bad, they don't get bad all at once. So you kind of get a little closer to the TV set and a little closer to the TV set. And then one day you realize, like, my face is 3 inches from the TV set. I better get glasses. Well, I guess OCD was kind of like that, where I didn't know what was going on. And then one day my mom just saw me counting like to 28, tapping on a coffee table, and was like, this kid should not be doing this. Get thee to a doctor. And yeah, I was lucky where I had the very telltale signs of it. Obviously for other people, it manifests as, you know, obsession with cleanliness or just obsession with everything being neat or stuff like that. The only thing that was a little weird was everybody in the world has obsessions, like normal obsessions, or not obsessions, but compulsions.
Or just weird little tics, right?
Yeah. Like, and some of those things can be tough to decide. Do you have a little bit of OCD or are you just a normal person? Like, I know people who, example, would ask me, do I have OCD because I have to check to make sure that the oven is turned off every night before I go to sleep? And, you know, that's on the borderline. Like, are you just being careful, or is that a habit that would drive you crazy if you told yourself, tonight I'm not going to check if the oven's turned off before I go to bed? You know, if you like to get a cup of water at your bedside every night and then all of a sudden realize it would make you uncomfortable if you didn't have that cup with you every night, even if you just have not had a drink of it in 2 weeks, you know, is that an obsession or is that just a regular compulsive behavior, you know? So stuff like that can be on the borderline, but luckily counting to like 57 before you felt comfortable going into a Dairy Queen, that's a pretty easy one to diagnose.
Yeah. I know I for sure have a lot of like weird little tics like that. For me, it's that I lock the door. Like it kills me. Like I have to get up because I think a bit too much. And I'm like, I have to just get up and check. And of course the door's like 9 times out of 10, it's locked, but you know, it's like that. Now, one time that you don't log
that
it.
Tenth time.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like that one time you don't do it will make you then check it 100 times when you did it right, which is so horrible.
Yeah.
Like, I think my parents had that with stuff like the coffee maker, and that all came from one time my family was going on a vacation, or like a family vacation, and we were probably 6 hours into the drive. And my dad became convinced that he had the coffee maker on at home. And we were going to be gone for days. So he became obsessed that this would burn down the house.
That's the worst.
And there was no one we could call to check. So we turned around and drove 6 hours home. And the coffee maker was off. And my parents had a gigantic fight. And we had to start the drive all over again.
That sucks, man. I just got a coffee maker where you can put it on a timer. So it's like, okay, it'll start brewing your coffee at whatever. No, I'm serious. And like,
I know you're serious, but come on. Is this really where the conversation
just really
is
quick.
Now?
And one time I thought, wait a minute, did I turn it off or did I put it on timer mode or is it still on? Like, fuck, I was out and obviously it was off, but
everything needs to be on Bluetooth, damn it.
That or Wi-Fi, where you can just control everything from your phone. That would be nice.
I need to know that it's off when I'm at work, just to make sure that everything's safe. I can't trust my dog anymore. She leaves the TV on.
just put a camera on everything, and then you can check the camera via your phone. You know, there's apps that you can do that type of stuff, you know? But driving 6 hours back, that's pretty extreme, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, but if you burn down the house, I mean, that's a risk reward quotient.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember being.
Where were you guys going, by the way? Sorry.
We were just going to, I think, visit my grandmother. My grandmother was like a 13-hour drive away, so we were like halfway there and just turned around and went home.
And there was nobody you could call to say, hey, can you just pop in really quick and check the.
No, we had kind of moved away from all our family. And hadn't really settled in, I don't think, yet. So it was literally like we were in a situation of a new town. We didn't know anybody. Had a coffee maker on. But I just
remember... What were you guys running from?
ex-wives, horrible family dysfunction.
Where do you live, Trevor?
Dream. I live in a city called Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada.
Oh, it's you're in like Canada.
150,000 person city. It's just a little place. Okay. Not, I mean, not small, but
yeah,
not huge. But I just, the last thing for that story was, I remember as I was the only one happy to go back because I had forgotten to return my rented copy of Sonic the Hedgehog 2. So I was like, guess who's not going to pay $20 in overdue fines? Like,
to Blockbuster?
Thank God I left this coffee maker on.
Did you, you, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just joking. I did not leave the coffee maker on.
I was going to say, did you use your, like, kind of knowledge of your own personal OCD and kind of, like, plant the seed into your dad's mind to make him so nervous about the coffee maker that he had to go back? Did you use that just so you could go get the video game? Was this all you're doing and you're just not admitting it to us?
I was definitely the kid that would twist the knife and be like, yeah, Dad, you don't want to regret this. I mean, it's going to ruin the whole vacation, Dad. I mean, come on. I mean, let's flip this Neil Diamond cassette over and turn this car around too. While we're at it.
Fantastic.
See, that's the difference between your dad and my dad, because my dad would be like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, but what if the house burns down? My dad would be like, no, we'll get another one. But Dad, we're poor. Well, it's fine.
That's the other thing. I'm sure I use that too. Like, Dad, we don't have fire insurance. We'll lose the VCR. We can't do it, Dad. It's too much to risk.
We'll lose the VCR.
The VCR. Hey, no joke. I was going through an old, a bunch of storage we had in a garage of stuff my mom had, and she had a receipt from Sears for financing a VCR back in the 80s. Like, that's how serious it was. God. She was financing a fucking VCR. So, you know.
Did she pay it off? Did she default on the VCR?
I think she did. I hope that ghost isn't still haunting her.
If they're going to repossess your VCR, do they take the tapes?
No, because the tapes are a whole separate, you know, thing, but
yeah, it's possible.
Wow.
That'd be very interesting.
I should ask her next time. We'll have her on.
I don't even know where we were at. We were talking about different stuff.
OCD. We're talking about OCD.
Allergies, OCD.
Allergies, got into OCD. That's
heart
good.
Trips,
So yeah, after you said that just, you know, light medication and the OCD is pretty much manageable.
Yeah, I don't really have any outward symptoms of it now.
That's what I was gonna say. Do you feel like there's anything? And I guess get that figured out, and then from there, I'm gonna assume at some point you move out onto your own after the vacation with the parents where the house wasn't burned down from the coffee pot. Do you end up going to college? Like, what was your first kind of moving out situation like?
I have not gone to college. That's actually something I'm in my early 30s now. Was thinking about doing. I was someone who lived at home for quite a bit, and I kind of just came back actually because my dad, again, my dad has been diagnosed with leukemia, so he kind of requires a lot of care. He can't drive himself to anywhere. But the thing, I always just remember, like, I think I had that prototypical experience of, you can't wait to leave, but then you miss all the comforts you get at home, like the laundry service that's called mom and all of that stuff. And there was always reasons to come back. Like, my parents started a weird business where we stole pallets from, like, the wooden pallets from that companies weren't using, and then we fixed them into better wooden pallets and resold them. And, like, stuff like that. Like, I would always get dragged back.
Okay. That's a weird scheme.
It was one of the weirdest 2 months of my life, where apparently there's an entire underground world of people who just drive around cities, find, like, wooden pallets that grocery stores and stuff are done using, and they take them and they build them into nicer pallets that can be sold at a higher amount of money back to the stores. And my dad, like, started a whole business doing this because he heard other people had done it. And we basically, in 2 months, like, it was like the first month we made a bunch of money, and the second month we lost all the money. And it was like, it was crazy. Like, there were competitors that were following us and like races to get pallets from like the good stores and like shady backroom deals. It was like when you discover the world of wrestling has a crazy underbelly, apparently the world of rebuilding pallets has a crazy underbelly that I did not know of.
Wow.
Yeah. Pallet restoration company. I mean, I've worked in Costco. Like, pallets are our bread and butter, and I had no clue that there was such a dark side.
That's crazy.
This is wild stuff, and you're dropping it to me late here. I want to, like, dig into this pallet restoration game, but that's nuts. I mean, we're almost at the point where we probably should just take a break and come back for the final question. I don't know, Adrian, is there anything else? I mean, I know you were only here for half of this, but is there anything you got to hit before we go?
I mean, honestly, I almost want to hear more about this pallet story. This is amazing. Because I would think, like,
if we have the time.
I would think, like, you know, stealing copper, like, that makes total sense. Copper is, you know, very valuable, but in the black market especially. But pallets, like, I never would have thought. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's something we can get into a different time, but it's up to you, Tim.
Maybe. Let's. You know what? This is what we're going to do. We're going to take a break. I'm going to see if we can get the big boys at Place to Be to give us a little extra time for this episode.
Okay.
And maybe we'll get into it. Maybe it's not even that much. Maybe we're overshooting the moon here, and there's not much more to the story. But what we're going to do is take another break. We'll come back, and then we'll get into it.
All right. Sounds good.
Wow.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA on-demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey Elliott's Bogus Journey, The Super Apuitas Podcast, The Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
All right, Adrian. So I just talked to Brad and Chad, and essentially, they don't like it. They don't like this idea at all. But I went over their head, straight to the big man. You know who the big man is.
Oh, I know who the big man is.
Yeah.
Who's the big man again?
And we got it. We've got all the time we need here. Now, Trevor, is there much more to this pallet story? Because I feel like me and Adrian are just excited by it. There's probably not.
There's a little bit, like, my dad was the kind of guy who would be the guy who would bring home magic beans. He was always trying to figure out a new way to earn us extra money. My parents, like, apparently were involved in a pyramid scheme. They did not start it, but they got out just before, like, it went under. My parents were once super into doing contests where, I don't want to open up another door, but just to explain kind of the schemes they did. Well, not even schemes, but you know how sometimes if you ever have done a contest where they'll say, like, to enter this contest, fill out this form and send one UPC code from the product or a hand-drawn facsimile. And you might wonder, well, who would do the hand-drawn facsimile? And my parents, for hours at a time every night after work, would hand-draw and cut out copies of barcodes from chocolate bars, cereal boxes, and they would enter like 100, 300, 400 entries into a single contest. And it won us like a $20,000 car and a 6-foot-tall inflatable T-Rex and camping equipment. But anyway, this thing for my dad was he was just looking for a way to earn extra money. And there was a guy who already had his own pallet thing. And he basically taught my dad kind of how to do it. And then over time, my dad realized he was paying everybody else way more than my dad because he could get away with it because my dad's kind of a softy. And so my dad was like, You know, the Dame family's going to start their own pallet business. This is what's going to bring it all back. And I have two half-brothers that are older that lived in other cities. My dad was like, this is going to support everybody. And he got them to move back. My mom was working. He bought thousands of dollars of pallets of like electric saws and nail guns and rented a forklift and rented a giant warehouse we'd work in. And he had a giant mechanical electric crowbar made to separate the boards of the pallets from them, each other. That, like, we had to find some crazy guy that knew how to design an electric crowbar and then get someone to make it for us. Where it was this giant metal machine where you would stick the pallet in it where kind of the boards were nailed together. And then you'd, like, put your foot down on a pedal and it would slowly pull it apart and make this huge loud noise. And that's what my mom would do. She would give the boards to me. I would use the electric saw to cut them into the right sizes. I'd pass them to my dad, who would nail them together and build new pallets. And then my brother would drive the forklift and stack them and stuff. And then my dad during the day would go out and try and find these pallets. And the big thing was, once they realized my dad was starting his own business, the guys who started to get pallets at 6 a.m. started waking up at 5 a.m. So then my dad had to wake up at 4 a.m. And then they started to work out deals where, like, we'll pay you for the pallets. And then the competition was like, we'll pay you more for the pallets. And it was just a really insane two-month period in my life where, like, the first month we got a huge order. And it was like, this is going to change our lives. Like, we are going to spend our lives stealing and rebuilding pallets. Like, it could support this entire family. And then the second month, it was like, we were completely undercut. You know, the people that we had contracts with swapped over. And it went from literally month one, we have money, to month two, we're selling all the equipment and getting jobs at Burger King. And it was just, it was like a two-month story in my life, which is, to this day, I have no idea why we did it, how it went wrong so quickly. I don't know. It just, I almost lost my eye during it because a giant, apparently if there's a knot in a piece of wood and you don't know that when you're using an electric saw, giant splinters can fly at your face at very high speeds. So, like, I nearly lost my eye. It just, like, the family got into huge arguments where members of it didn't speak to each other for years because of the business failing. It was just, if I was ever going to write a script about a period of my life, that is one of the two things I would write it about.
It does.
Of all the,
it sounds
of
like
all the
a
cutthroat
movie.
Businesses there is, I never would have thought pallets. Wow.
It sounds like the plot of a movie, but it also sounds like your dad is like a character out of a sitcom with the coming up with random stuff. Like, it almost is like Sunny. Like, your dad is almost Frank. There's so many. It feels so involved that it would be easier to just make new pallets. Like,
Well, the idea would be that we're undercutting people that make official pallets. Like, there are people that make pallets brand new. And the idea would be, we're taking pallets that are broken down that they just want to get rid of, and then we're putting in this huge amount of work, but this will allow us to sell a pallet for like $3 less. And the idea is we would make up for that in volume.
Right.
But
yeah, this sounds like a good underdog story. This is like your dad versus Big Pallet. You know what I mean?
Well, but the thing is, it's even more than that because it's against the guy who obviously didn't train him well enough because he didn't let you know about the knots in the wood with the saw. And I guess his day of pallet education didn't include that part of the lesson, but like, he's going up against him as well. So he's a double underdog. They're like underdogs to Big Pallet, then underdogs to the man who already does the pallet restoration. Like, this is something else. So it's like Dame and Sons Pallet Restoration Company. And it's, he brings multiple people quit their jobs and move.
Like, I don't even know if some of them had jobs. Like, I know my brother Darren, I don't think, had a job. But it was just like this idea of, if this worked, like, this could support everybody. And I mean, apparently there's money in pallets, because the first month we had thousands of dollars and left over after like all expenses. And then, you know, the very next month it was like, well, you've been undercut, and they told us they really don't want us working with you in addition to them. Like, my dad's old boss decided to run my dad out of business, and yeah, it lasted 2 months.
It feels like the way you say it, it's just 2 months, he just gave up, like, and started selling. So was there any, like, hope to maybe go to a new city, stake out a new territory, anything like that? Or was it just, this is over, let's move on instantly?
We had racked up a lot of credit card debt. I don't know if we could have moved down the block at that point, let alone to a new city. We had kind of put everything into it, and that kind of devotion of where things are starting to go bad, you just double down, like, well, let's put even more money into this. So by the time it failed, like in that second month, we had devoted too much to it. And to the point, again, where like my mom, who was a stay-at-home mom my entire life, had to take a job at Burger King to like pay off the credit card debt our family had incurred. It was just, it blew up in probably the most spectacular way, which was about par for the course for the Dame family.
So, you guys were over leveraged. Would you say that it was kind of like a real life version of the Big Short?
I would say more like Arrested Development, but with pallets.
Yes, it does seem that way. This was the bubble bursting on the pallet market here. And I'm sorry, it was a Kosh. It's hard for me to pronounce the name of the city that you were in. Is it
Kelowna?
Kelowna, that's it. Sorry.
Kelowna, yeah. Yeah.
There's always money in the banana stand, though, Tim.
There's always money in the pallets. Well, Adrian,
severely money in the banana stand.
Have we severely pumped this topic, you think, for the night? Can we?
I think we have. I think that was a great story.
Just say, if you live in a city that isn't Kelowna, you might have the room to become the pallet magnate of your city. Like, maybe there is no Pierre in your city that's going to run you out of the business with an iron fist.
His name was Pierre.
He was like a French Canadian immigrant from the eastern part of the country.
No, not
French.
Yeah, to make this weirder.
That's fantastic. Oh my god, he was like a pirate. It was a French pirate named Pierre, riding the high waves of pallets. Well, Adrian, you know what time it is. Then, if we're going to close out the episode, I think here.
Yes, Tim, I think you're right. I think it's time for the final question.
The final question. Everyone knows it. Everyone loves it, I think. So, Trevor, someone who only knows you from throughout the years, I guess, which is not a long-going podcast, so you probably got a lot of a deep well of stuff to dig to pump from for here. And it's not just the story about the pallets, because that's already shocking enough. What would be something about you that they would find shocking at this point?
I very briefly had like 15 minutes of national fame in my country for wearing a rabbit mask and selling mediocre advice for 25 cents.
Mm.
That's the truth. After I broke up with a girlfriend when I was 16 or 17, I was kind of depressed. So I wanted to do something goofy where I could come into contact with just people I didn't have connections with. And I took an old kids' table I had when I was 5 years old, sat in front of my parents' house, and drew a giant sign that said, mediocre advice, 25 cents. Because I thought, I can't sell anything. I'm not good at making things. I hadn't discovered pallets yet. and I couldn't promise good advice. Saying bad advice, 25 cents, sounded too like snarky teen. So I said, I can promise mediocre advice. And for about a month, I sold it successfully. And then one day, a news van going to some other story drove by, turned around, came back, and said, you're more interesting than the story I was going to cover. And the day after they reported that, I was on, like, Canadian CBC national radio. I was in newspapers. I was a regular guest on a Manitoba-based radio show for half a year. I I had German film students say they wanted to make a documentary about me, and they had me write up my entire life story for them, and then said, I'm sorry, Trevor, I really fought for you, but the other people in my class decided we wanted to do a documentary about young Hitler instead. And I thought, great, there's another reason to hate Hitler. Like, finally, I have a good second reason. You know, there's that one thing he did and denied me getting a bunch of German film students making a documentary about a goofy thing I did when I was 16. But, yeah, I think people, again, we started the show talking about how kind of reserved I was. I definitely have, like, this other side of me where to get attention so people would slow down and read the sign, I wore, like Hawaiian leis and a half-faced child's rabbit mask that didn't cover my entire head. And it was... Yeah, it's a story that I think people wouldn't expect who know me that I maybe would do that, but it's something I did when I was younger.
If I Google you, will I be able to see any of this stuff? Because I feel like I have to do that now. You know what I mean?
I don't think so. I think there might be have been a couple websites that were like weird news of the world, and I would be like between the guy who accidentally set his ass on fire and like... the five-legged dog or something, but it was mostly just little blurbs. I was on the CBC radio show As It Happens. I don't know if they keep long-term or archives, because this would probably literally be 15, 16 years ago. So, but yeah, it was just, those are my two weird stories. Like, people who think I have more weird stories, I might, but I think literally palettes and advice are my two aces in the hole. And now I'm out of cards.
Wow. Well, we'll have to wait a few years, and hopefully there'll be some more cards we can have you back here, huh?
Yeah.
But what was the like the recurring on the radio show spot? They had you on to do advice, I would assume?
Yes. And I was like such a nervous, gawky 16-year-old that I wasn't good at it. And... like, the first episode, he was like, great job, kid. I know you'll keep getting better at this. You were a little nervous, but you'll get the hang of it. And he sent me, like, a Christmas card and a cassette tape of my appearance. And then, like, each appearance got farther apart, and eventually he just stopped calling me. Like, I never got better.
Damn. I know, because it almost seems like you could have parlayed this into something, man. They could have really made a name for yourself, kid.
I got my first job out of it. I got my job at a burger place called Burger Baron.
Really?
That I quit after 1 month because they saw my name in the newspaper.
Nice. Where does a baron come down in the hierarchy compared to a king?
I am not sure. I know this literal Burger Baron establishment was so bad that I had a coworker that said, I am quitting this job to get a job mining coal because it is easier than this. Like, he literally said that. That's how bad the conditions were in this place. And at that point, when you see a guy that's like 40 tell you, I'm leaving this fast food job to mine coal, you start seeing that you're not going to have much of a future in it.
Well, I mean, I guess that's as good a place as any. So go ahead and tell the people you won't have to mind Adam Cole on the ROH podcast that you
not
do.
Not for years.
Not for many, many years. Anything else you need to plug there, Trevor?
Actually, I think I have a little bit of a surprise. I decided to save this for the end. This is nothing against Cubs fan. We've talked it with him, and he's still a great, great person that we love. But we are actually moving the podcast to the Place to Be Nation.
No and way!
The fifth episode is in the can and should be going up any day now. In fact, depending on what goes up, it might already be up. But yeah, so all four of the original episodes of the show are still at thecubsfan.com. I think they'll eventually be on the archive page at the Place to Be Nation. But yeah, this is actually a nice little way to launch where, yeah, we'll be joining you on the Place to Be Nation Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network.
That is awesome. Fantastic news. It's very funny that it comes out. This is like the third or fourth weird thing that's broken on the show. But this time, I had no clue. I was surprised too, everybody. So that's pretty cool. Otherwise, I guess, Adrian, anything you need to plug before we go?
No, just follow me at Devil Boots. Follow us at Lucha Undead. And yeah, keep listening to the show, everybody. That's pretty much it.
Thank you. And yeah, just follow me on Twitter, Lucha Undead. Once again, I guess I'm supposed to close it out with the three B's, but tonight's three B's, I guess, are bunny masks, pizza barons, no, burger barons, and I don't know, man. I can't think of the third one. Just,
I think decent banter is good.
Banter, yeah, just decent banter. Mediocre banter, if as it were. good night, everybody.
Good night.